I'm Pier Giorgio Di Cicco, poets to read are a dime a dozen, really, even great poets. But great spirits to be companioned with are very, very rare. And that's what Irving was to me and to many people. He had fire, he had balls, and he was a man who could say, I love you, if he felt he had to say it. And that's what made him a great man and a great human being. Irwin said that Irving was a spiritual mentor for him. A spiritual father. To me, he was a romantic mentor. And I used to go to Irving whenever I had little things to iron out in my romantic trajectory, since he was so expert in love poems. He never wrote me a love poem, but that's okay. So I used to go to Irving regularly, and I was having regular fits of Byronic despondency about post-60s, everyone was just very, very hard times. And so on one occasion, I phoned him up. I said, Irving, I have to see you. I was going out with an heiress, and as Moses pointed out, the plight, it can be bad for poets. You can end up not starving, having very little money. And this was a real quandary for me because she had a lot of money, this woman. I was a young man, and so she had a lot of money, and it was fine, it was companionable, but so I said, Irving, I've got to talk to you. So we met in a donut shop, and I said, Irving, help me out with this, you know, this woman, she has a lot of money, and it's very companionable, it's very good, everything's fine, but Irving, I'm not in love with her. I'm not in love with her, and I don't think, you know, I can go ahead with this. I have to break it off. But then again, the future's not looking good. The grants aren't coming in the way they used to. Blah blah blah. What do you think, Irving? And he looked down for a moment, very thoughtfully, and for a moment took some time out, and then looked up, and very abruptly and somewhat angrily, grabbed me by the collar and said, Giorgio, don't be a fool, marry her. Not only did he remain a romantic figure for me, but a great philosophical mind. I've had years to reflect on it. The unequivocal was Irving's great gift to Canadiana. Conviction threaded through his heart and his mind and found spontaneity in a love of discourse, a love of play, compelled by the notion that silence could only breed misunderstanding and Canadian self-doubt. He was made for a country beginning to see itself, articulating itself, in need of those who were proud to be a breed of their own. His poetry was anomalous. It had no roots in the measured registers of Canadian poetry. It disdained the topicality of landscape and the myths of wilderness and northness. The only thing homegrown about Irving's poetry was the Dionysian flavor of his passion, self-generated and unbeholden to the vagaries of time, place, and generation. And that's why people identified with it. People. Not the markets of literature, not the classes of the educated, not the political pundits of identity. People who wanted to know that a poet could remind them of the fervor that sustains daily life. His subjects were love, sex, death, and more love. The defiance of time, the lust for life, and more love. Contempt for the small-minded, contempt for tyranny, and more love. He was a student of love, and if his love got packaged sometimes in the immoderate, if his love exceeded the forms of verse or constraints of rhetoric like Pablo Neruda, his generosity of spirit seduced the reader to the poetry in the man. For it was the poetry of life that we wanted from Irving. The clues about how to be larger than ourselves, a lesson we wanted as Canadians, in spite of ourselves. He was larger than life. My memory's pale. Reality stings at the thought of Irving languishing away in his later years. But they are distilled into the memory of a man who mixed vanity with talent in such a way as to convince that the celebration of the ego was the extent to which the heart's muscle could expand. If he had heart, it was because he could love himself. If he could love himself, it was because he had faith that a man's worth was about forgiving his own foolishness to reach the extraordinary, a lesson still on the curriculum of national consciousness. He is still controversial. His voice of bombast is cheek to cheek with his forgiveness for the human condition. And his statement is the poignancy of all things human, a library of poetry still unrivaled in Canadian poetry. He didn't believe in many realities and many versions of compassion and the many ways to live life safely as a politically correct animal. He had one embracing heart and a voice to match it. And his generosity to younger writers is a legacy to be studied. He was international before the global ever came around. And if young writers can assume they can speak globally without the agony of Canadian timidness, it is partly because of the flexed muscle of a historical angel called Irving Layton.